Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Coach Podcast. Since 2010, the most listened to show in the nonprofit sector dedicated to helping your charity succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to fundraising success, and practical nonprofit management advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach Podcast with Ted Hart is the perfect landing point to learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is, without a doubt, one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, his books range from successful online fundraising to expert nonprofit management. Guests on the Nonprofit Podcast are leaders in their field who share their insider tips and trade secrets in a conversational style both the experienced and novice will benefit from. Ted and his guests help you and your organization move to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. After the show, you can find all of our podcasts at tedhart.com, on iTunes, and now just say, Alexa, play Nonprofit Coach on TuneIn. Now, welcome the host of the Nonprofit Coach Podcast, Ted Hart.
Welcome to this very special edition of the Nonprofit Coach. Today, we recognize and honor and remember Simone Joyeau, world-renowned fundraiser, author, board member, partner, icon, mentor, teacher, hero, activist, and I can go on and on. The strength of this woman just lives on beyond her. She passed away on Sunday, May 2nd. We have a lot of people who want to recognize her today. For those of you who are listening right now and you're in the green room, just stay right where you are. We're going to be recognizing everybody today. Simone was a guest on the Nonprofit Coach podcast many times over the years. And for her last episode, she directed that the title would be Nonprofit Coach, Simone Joyeau Uncensored, Thoughtful, Inspirational Philanthropy. And I think for any of us who had the pleasure of knowing her, we certainly would see that as a title that sums up her incredible career. Simone would not be censored. Simone had very strong opinions and views, and she was a very strong advocate of philanthropy. I want to start off with, I think Leah Eustace is here with us. And Leah, I know you've got some great memories of Simone, and you've worked with her partner, Tom Ahern, who really, when he heard and when I asked him if it would be all right if we put this show together, he said, absolutely, it would be wonderful and a great way to recognize Simone's life. And you've got an opportunity for people who want to have another way to remember Simone. So welcome here, Leah.
Thank you so much, Ted. It's an honor to kind of be put up front here. I so appreciate it. And, you know, I'm not surprised to hear that Tom, welcomed this opportunity to recognize his beloved Simone. Tom's just so incredibly gracious. And let me kind of talk about this opportunity and then just, if I may, take a minute or two to reflect on Simone and my perhaps unique relationship to her. So first of all, I there's so many incredible ways to honor her presence, her presence on this earth. Although her physical presence may be gone, I'm a true believer that the science tells us that one's energy never leaves. And her energy, her ferocity, her tenacity will be with us forever. And that certainly gives me great comfort. And as many people know, I'm quite involved with AFP, particularly AFP in Canada. I am Canadian, born and bred and a proud Canadian. And in consultation with Tom and certainly given Simone's background, AFP has set up a fund, the Simone Joyeau Fund, to further some of the values she so passionately believed in, namely tackling injustice and inequity. And the Simone Joyeau Fund will provide scholarships to BIPOC and LGBTQ2S Canadian fundraisers. Now, why Canadian? Well, of course, if you look at Simone's heritage, it is very much bilingual, English and French. Her father was French, and her father, as Thomas told us, was really a believer in multilingualism, multiculturalism. He would often tell Simone to, he would say, sors de ton ghetto linguistique, get out of your linguistic ghetto. He would say that to his students. And so the idea of setting up a scholarship fund for Canadian fundraisers in this bilingual country really was sort of a perfect idea in Tom's mind. And so anyone who might be interested in giving to that fund, you can go to aspglobal.org/sjfund and give either through the AFP Foundation in the U.S. or the AFP Foundation in Canada. And those funds will be directed to a Canadian fundraiser, either BIPOC or LGBTQ2S, as I said. Now, if I may, I'm not sure I've ever talked about this publicly before, not for any particular reason, but I think when it comes to my thoughts of Simone, this really comes to the forefront. It's something I've really reflected on over the past 2.5-3 weeks. I talk quite openly about the fact I live with mental illness, and one of the diagnoses I live with is a personality disorder. And one of the, I guess, aspects of that personality disorder, which it drives me a bit nuts myself, which I can say, is that I have extreme difficulty making friends. It's extremely difficult. I can count on one hand, and half a hand, the number of very close friends I have. And when I think of Simone and reading the tributes to her, she's lived like the opposite of me. And, you know, it's not that I don't want to make friends. It's that I can't make friends. And I think how I wish I could have been braver. I could have been how I wish I could. You know, if there was one person in the world I could have been brave enough to open myself up to, it would be Simone. And that's come partly just after her death and reading the tributes and learning more about her. I think she would have changed my world, honestly. Mm. And, you know, I have regrets because I think of all the opportunities I was in her presence, feeling unworthy at this amazing woman and the energy she gave off and all the things she was that I feel I am not. And yes, you know, people will tell me, yes, I am. But, you know, this is my brain works in different ways. So it's a very different kind of reflection that we're likely to hear today. But it's had me thinking about her a lot in the last 2.5-3 weeks. And will have me thinking about her a lot for the rest of my life, I think.
I just want to say thank you for sharing that, because what a wonderful tribute to anybody to find inspiration in them after they're no longer with us. Simone was unfailingly kind and could see everyone and did see everyone. And so there you have it. She's, you know, if you can take that, you've been thinking about her. She wants you to think about her and for you to be inspired in that way. While you feel like maybe she would have changed it, I think she is changing your life. And if you continue thinking about that, I think that'll be a wonderful tribute to Simone if she continues to inspire you in that way. And thank you for sharing the link for those who maybe didn't quite get that. I have posted it at facebook.com/TedHart. You'll find the link that Leah shared today. And again, Leah pointed out that if you're Canadian, you can make a Canadian donation to the Simone Joio Fund. And if you're American, you can make a donation there as well. So, Leah, stay with us if you can. If you need to drop off, we understand. I'm just going to go to caller 301-537, beginning of your call. If you could just introduce yourself and tell us what you'd like to remember about Simone. If you've got the phone number 301-537, please just join us. And caller from number 949-235, if you can join us and introduce yourself and share your story.
Well, good morning to this Jim Greenfield, and I'm the 949 area code.
Wonderful, Jim. Yes, of course, you and Simone had lots of opportunities to work together and know each other.
Yes, we did. At beginning in the early 80s, I was still in the Boston area and Simone in Rhode Island, and we crossed paths a couple of times, but more significantly separate from serving on AFP committees and both the foundation and the society, was NSFRE then. We also began our writing or publishing. We both wrote ahead of time, but we didn't get published until the early 90s and enjoyed making reference to each other's books in our own texts. Just a final thought, and I've had many over the last few days. Simone spoke here in our chapter in Washington on the 23rd of April, very shortly before she passed away. And we didn't know it at the time, but she was aware of her illness for more than a year ahead of that, and yet she continued without any hesitation to participate and share with us her thoughts. I think it's important to me to remember her in the sense that she wanted us to do more and to do it better. Back to you, Ted.
Yeah, well, thank you. And Jim, you know, stay with us as long as you can. Thank you for sharing that. When I think of my times with Simone, we spoke at the same program so many times, and we were both invited to participate in the 2000 AFP Faculty Academy, which was, you know, really one of the first times I had an opportunity to connect with her. And then, Jim, I think you were very much involved with the CFRE separation from AFP and Simone's involvement with that. And I was asked to serve on the finance committee that overlooked and made a recommendation on could CFRE stand on its own. And that was sort of a high energy time for a lot of people, and just a lot of leaders stepped forward to help through that program. I'm going to go to the next caller. If you've got area code 360281, if you could introduce yourself and just share with us your story of Simone.
This is James Phelps, and I did not have the good fortune of having a lot of personal conversations or interaction with Simone, but I certainly followed her any time that I saw she was speaking and I had the possibility to hear her, I did. And I do have a favorite memory of her that just was so typical of everything that I ever saw in my encounters with her. She did a presentation at the International Conference after she had written the book on How to Fire Your Board, which, of course, you know, was the usual provocative title. And I remember at one point she was talking about those difficult conversations that you sometimes have to have with board members, trying to sort of rein them in. And, Simone was wearing her usual, also somewhat provocative sometimes, outfit. She had, you know, the large rings. She was wearing a very large necklace that day. and, you know, just was her usual vibrant self. And the person asked, you know, raised her hand and asked the question, how do you start that conversation? Could you just sort of, you know, maybe role play for us? And Simone sweeps her hands up and down along her body and says, do I look like I'm ever subtle? And that, to me, was typical Simone. I just, of all the times that I heard her speak, and there's probably many quotes I could do because I have quoted her on numerous occasions, but that, of all of them, was just the most archetypal example of who she was. So that's one of my favorite memories of her.
That's a wonderful memory, and of course she was answering her own question, because, you know, there's never anything that was subtle about Simone, but that's part of what we loved about her, right? So you know, what are some of your other favorite stories or sayings from Simone?
So the other one I remember well was, as I was trying to get my ACFRE credits, one of the tapes that was available was one of her programs. And so I, of course, like jumped at like, oh, I can get a half an hour ethics credit for this one, which was what drew me to her, to it originally. But she was talking about a point in time where she had worked for a, I believe it was a theater program, nonprofit. And the first year that she was there, you know, she had just a huge increase in revenue, 20%. And then the next year had a similar. And at the end of the third year, when it became time for evaluation, she had not seen that similar increase, even though that had been sort of budgeted and there had been some expectations of that. And when confronted as to why she had not reached goal, her response was, perhaps it was more the quality of the programming or the artistic programming that led to this decline, as opposed to the quality of the development program.
Okay.
Once again, just another excellent example of how she just stood up for herself and you know, was able to have those difficult conversations with a bit of humor, but also a huge amount of hubris.
Yeah, always inspirational, right? But also very much willing to look at herself and to, you know, see fault if there is fault, but to learn from the situation one way or the other. And I think she encouraged all of us to feel that way. Please stay with us if you'd like. I'm going to go to a caller. If your area code is 631-383, please introduce yourself and share your best memories or stories about Simone.
Yes, hello. My name is Camise Johnson, and I am an officer in the Private Donor Services at CAS America. And on a daily basis, I have the pleasure of working with different clients. And several months ago, Simone became one of those clients, and a quite memorable one at that. I recall as I had the pleasure of meeting and interacting with her, she just had a very joyful disposition, and she was really inspiring to interact with. And, you know, that is something that is always a welcoming disposition to have, you know, during your workday. And I remember being incredibly motivated by her enthusiasm. I recall her as having an optimistic approach to life. And, you know, I think that is a legacy that will live on with her philanthropic efforts. And that is the most important thing, I think, that she's left behind is her optimism and just her unwavering energy.
Tamisha, I'm so glad that you called in to share this side of Simone, because I think for many of us and a lot of the stories that we'll hear today, we knew her as a teacher, as a trainer, as a lecturer, as an author, of someone who, helped nonprofits do a better job, raise more money, build their boards of directors or fire the boards of directors. This is Simone as a philanthropist, as someone giving back, and from your perspective, she was just as joyful in giving back and being a philanthropist herself.
Incredibly so. She really believed in the purpose in that she was giving towards, and that was infectious. It really is, and very inspiring. As I continue to work with this fund of hers here at CAF America, that is something that I will remember daily. That's behind, all of this, that just the energy and the motivation and just really the heart that's behind the history of this fund.
Well, and of course that lives on with her, and of course with you have all these memories of someone that perhaps you didn't know as a lecturer or trainer or an author, but only know her as through her philanthropy. And I'm so glad that you were able to share that with us. What are some of the, as you're working through the process of helping her establish her fund and become a philanthropist in that regard, what are some of the memories that you have in terms of questions that she asked or how she approached that?
Oh, she had questions as far as, the impact that her giving would have, and really just, what we were able to do through the international grant-making process the purpose that it would go towards. And I specifically recall the particular grantee that she was just dedicated to working with, and this was an institute that conducts scientific research in the domain of philanthropic psychology. I basically remember that, and she was really focused on the impact that her giving would have here.
Kamish, again, thank you so much for giving us an opportunity to hear about and see that side of Simone as well. Stay with us if you can. I'm going to go on to a caller. If your area code is 403-815, please join us, introduce yourself, and share your memories of Simone or favorite teaching. Yes, go ahead, 403-815.
Yeah, hi, sorry about that. It's Andrea McManus, and I'm calling from Calgary, Alberta, up in Canada.
Thank you so much. You and Simone did so many things together.
Yeah, we did for sure. Like many other people, I've known Simone for quite a long time, but I really got to know her much better when I was chair of AFP Global. And I made it kind of a mission of mine to Simone wasn't happy with AFP at the time, and as you know, she was fierce in her criticisms, but also fierce in her support. And Robbie Healy and I made a mission to bring her back on side, and we did, I think. And but one thing I came to realize about Simone, she was a person of great integrity, and you may get her on side with something, but you had to work to keep that. It wasn't unconditional, and she was such a critical thinker and deep thinker that she always, kept her eye on the ball. I also had an opportunity, and for those of you who are aware of this, if you're not aware, Simone really eschewed technology, and I bet there's not a person listening that ever saw Simone do anything on with PowerPoint, and she was really legendary for that. And after she passed away, she had committed the following Friday to do three sessions with her Rhode Island chapter. And so Tyslee Williams and I sat in for her on the first one, which was just 5 or 6 days after she left us. And that was kind of formidable to know that you're stepping in for Simone Joyeux. And that is a very limited time to prepare for it. It was sort of a two-hour conversation.
There had been a lot of
the night before, I was
in the audience, right?
So the night before, I was going through all of her materials, and I thought, oh, I'll just put a few things up on a PowerPoint slide just to help collect my thoughts. And then I almost immediately thought, oh, my God, I better not do that. Wherever she is, she'll come down and smite me for using PowerPoint. It was a tough thing to do, and there were lots of tears from the people who were in the session. But I was really honored to be able to do that. However sad it was, I think we've lost such a deep thinker in our profession. But I think we are grateful she has left also a huge amount of resources for us. She will be with us for a very, very long time.
Yeah, and future generations of donors and fundraisers, you know, will reference her for a long time. I mean, the lectures and books that she's left behind is such a big treasure. I mean, how do you view that, or how should we view that as a profession to be left such a rich treasure?
Oh, I think I'm not sure what Tom will do with all of that, but I would expect that he will, you know, so much of it is on her website, and I'm sure that he will continue that. I would expect that he would, but I think so much of her stuff is timeless because it's about theory, it's about thoughtfulness, it's about intentionality, it's fundamental underpinnings. I think it will continue to underpin the way we think about what we do for a very, very long time.
I think she challenges us, right? I mean, you brought up her website. So if you don't mind, Andrea, I just wanted to share a little bit from her website. I don't know how many of us have been to SimoneJoyeux.com in a while, but she says on her website, what I help you do, raise more money, build a stronger board, plan for the future, fix problems, and take advantages of opportunities, which all of that right there sums up Simone, right? But she says, she goes on to say, maybe you're a young organization, or maybe you need to develop your capacity. Maybe you're an established organization, but you've encountered some setbacks. Maybe you're a highly experienced organization looking to innovate, and maybe you're something else altogether. And then it's this final piece here that I just wanted to give to you to sort of unpack for us. I can help you as your partner, resource, and trusted advisor. And if you're worried about the cost or availability, don't be. Now, how many people say that on their website? I mean, she was in business. I mean, she was, you know, someone who wrote books and provided consulting, but her concern there was to help, to be a partner, to be a resource. And, you know, if you're worried about cost, don't be. I mean, how many people do that?
Not, well, I mean, I think she, you know, she set the standard for us in so many ways. And she really met that, you know, I've heard people comment since her passing of how Simone, you know, at the end of conferences, you could always find her with the young fundraisers. She loved talking to young fundraisers, and she would give out her phone number and her contact information, and she would, you know, say to them, if you need to talk to someone, you can talk to me, call me anytime. And she really met that and lived and breathed that. So
she really did. There's a famous quote that says, we never realize the value of something in our life until it becomes a memory. So as Simone becomes a memory, what should we realize of the value? What do you think that is?
Oh, I think I would say Simone was a great inspirer. She made you want to be better. She made you want to do better. And, you know, I know she made me want to be like her. So I think she was.
I hear that, but I'm just wondering, what does that mean? What does that say to you? I mean, you want to be her, you want to be more like her. I mean, I think a lot of people would benefit from being more like Simone, but in your mind, what are those qualities or values that she leaves behind and sort of challenges us to step up to be?
I think her fearlessness in asking tough questions, her not only of others, but of herself, the depth to which she thought about positions and ideas and practices. And then I would say her unparalleled ability to both elegantly and eloquently make her opinions known or express her opinions. Those are real skill sets. And you know, I think we all need to work on those skill sets, but she was just unparalleled with that.
Yeah. I can't think of a time that I was ever with Simone, and many times when I was with her, there's quite a crowd of people, or we were, you know, at an AFP meeting, board meeting, or something of that sort. She had, as you just said, she had the ability to be heard. When she started speaking, there was just something about her grace, and sometimes, as you said, she could be tough, but always fair. You wanted to hear what she had to say. You wanted to hear it.
Yes, you did. You wanted to hear her. Yep.
Yes. Andrea, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks,
she absolutely
okay.
You know, I know that you know Kathy Williams very well, and Kathy has sent in a tribute. And you just give me a second. I'm just going to play that for everyone.
I've known Simone for many years in many of her roles as an ACFRE certificate, a speaker, a participant and leader in many AFP boards and committees. It's easy to cite the obvious about Simone. She was smart, articulate, knowledgeable, committed, an exemplar of professionalism. But what I will remember most about her is her zest for life. When she was in, she was really in. She was a force of nature. She volunteered to help. She walked the talk. Dare I say it, she could be difficult. But one always knew where she stood. She didn't sit back. She spoke up. She also listened with an open mind. And she generously shared her time and expertise with so many in the profession of fundraising. The world is a better place because of our dear Simone.
Well, hear, hear, Kathy. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I we have someone joining us. I believe this gentleman is calling from Spain. So I see country code 34. Do I know who this is, sir? You certainly knew Simone. Tell your story, please.
Hi. Can you hear me, Ted?
I can hear you. Please, you're on.
Great. I just wasn't sure. Thanks a lot for inviting me to join this call, Ted. And as many of us are celebrating, I would say, Simone's life, because the only way of thinking about her not being
with her. Let everybody know who you are. Please let everybody know.
I'm Darrell Upsall. Sure, I'm Darrell Upsall. I'm a fundraising consultant, had 37 years in the sector, and I'm based in Spain. And I've traveled the world with Simone because we're on the same, bit like Ted, really, we've been on the same eternal fundraising rock and roll speaking tour from country to country, and spend a lot of time with Simone. Also, I'm a former AFP board vice chair responsible for ICON and other training. So I worked with Simone when she came back into the fold, shall we say, and was kicking from the inside again. Having spent many years kicking the AFP from the outside, because Simone knew how to kick.
I don't know if you heard, Andrea McManus was just here sharing, the role that she played in bringing Simone back in.
I did indeed, and in fact, me and Andrea were talking earlier about just that. So, if you want me to go on, Ted, I can say, for me,
yes, please do.
Simone was Yeah, she was fiery, wild, challenging, disturbing, entertaining. She was always shaking the tree. And in fact, the way we brought her back into the AFP fold in terms of the conference was we co-created, along with other colleagues, a track called Rebels, Renegades, and Pioneers. Now, however much you think about Simone, she ticks all of those boxes. And that, yeah, she sure did.
No, go on, please, please.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll just share one little personal anecdote because, you know, we all know what a brilliant contribution Simone made to the sector, how she challenged ideas, how she wouldn't take the status quo for granted. But she was also fun. And I think, you know, Andrea talked about something earlier, which we both talked about elsewhere, is the one thing of Simone, you saw this big star on stage, rings, red stockings, bright colored technicolor clothes that, you know, she should have been a character in the Harry Potter movies. And, you know, you were in awe and fear when she presented, in case she picked on you and made the comment that suddenly shook you out of your slumber. But then, many times, as many of us have commented, you'll be at the end of a conference and she'll be in a quiet corner with the youngest, newest, particularly female fundraising professionals, just sharing with them, just sharing her experience, but more than sharing, listening and learning from young people and then providing real support. We've heard a couple of times now how she gave herself for free in order to help others grow and develop. And that's something very special. And I think teaches us all something about how we can behave as fundraising leaders in the sector.
What does she challenge us for all of us who are listening and those who will listen after and maybe sadly didn't have the opportunity to know Simone? What does she leave us? What does she challenge us to do?
I think she leaves us to never let the status quo remain the same, never put up with boards or leadership that is inadequate, to challenge it, even if that sometimes may have a personal and professional price, but not to just sit back and say, okay, well, I'll take that for granted. And I think the other thing is she taught us, or she shared with us, how to have this debate. While she was rhetorical and loud and vociferous on stage, because that's what you are on stage. You are performing at the end of the day. When you sat with her afterwards and talked about any issue, she listened and she absorbed and understood others' comments and then drove the conversation forward rather than digging into a hole and sticking her feet in the ground. She was a very dynamic person, and what she leaves behind is obviously a legacy of presentations, no PowerPoint, that's for sure, and a legacy of books and things that we can read.
And future generations will read of Simone Joyeau, and I wanted to ask you, one of the last things that she wrote in one of her final blogs, she says, "Remember that donors give through a particular charity to fulfill their own personal aspirations."
Yeah, I recall that.
That seems to be something that she leaves us, that challenges. Not every fundraiser recognizes that. So, again, what is she leaving behind that should change us, or at least want us to change?
Well, there's that old adage, Ted, in fundraising, isn't it? We were born with two ears and one mouth. And I think Simone, though she had a very powerful voice, she was better at listening. And I think if there's one lesson from that, is let's listen to our donors or our funders. They may be foundations, they may be corporations, they may be wealthy individuals, or they may be just the person giving that single gift. Listen to them, understand them. Find out what their motivations are and help them fulfill their objectives, or if it's an individual, their dreams to make a better place. Don't just tell them what you do. Listen and see if you're able to meet their needs. That's a lesson I take from Simone.
Yeah, I do as well. As I shared earlier, she was a guest on this Nonprofit Coach podcast many times. And when I was just kind of having a flashback here as you shared sort of the word dream, because she very much wanted fundraisers to understand the role of the donor was not just to write a check. And that's something that she kept coming back to. How do we make sure that we not lose that lesson?
I think, you know, the one thing that I find quite strange about probably 90% of fundraisers is they never get to talk to a donor. That's the danger of technology. And even though, okay, we can't meet the donor physically right now in most cases, we can't do that sitting and empathizing with our body language so much through Zoom and other tools. I think the best we can do as fundraisers at any level is to actually listen to donors. And that nowadays may mean picking up a telephone. One of the first lessons I learned in fundraising was from one of the pioneers of fundraising in Oxfam. And he was the chief executive. And every Friday, he just called five donors of Oxfam, not because they were the biggest donors that week, just because they were donors, supporters, and just introduced himself and said, what can we do to help you and to help you fulfill your dreams? And I think if we do some more of that, instead of just look at the statistics, look at the data, and hide behind our computer screen sometimes, we will become better fundraisers, and donors will trust us more because we take the time to care and listen.
Why is that scary for, and maybe I'm making an assumption here, younger fundraisers or those who, you know, are starting in the profession? Because I think, you know, for those of us who've been around for a little while, you know, we didn't have technology in the way that we have it now. So you didn't have the opportunity to hide behind email or any other kind of technology. You weren't going to raise money if you weren't going to be in front of people. And I hear from you that, you know, maybe some of that's being lost. I think that's a fear that Simone had. But can that be heard now, or is that just something that you just can't get across?
Well, Ted, as you will know, I'm considered one of the co-founders of a thing called Face-to-Face Fundraising, which is the biggest single fundraising channel in the world pre-COVID, which is actually mostly young people in shopping malls, street corners, at events, talking to donors and potential donors and listening to them and convincing them with a case for support, sometimes with only seconds to capture their attention, about causes they are not only raising a cash gift for, they are raising long-term commitments for. So every day, for example, I look at blogs on Facebook from the face-to-face fundraising community around the world, watching these brilliant, energized, exciting young people asking people to support causes, whether it's a health cause or it's a UN agency or it's Save the Children or whatever, or Greenpeace, which invented face-to-face. And they are doing what most of us started doing, but now they're doing it every single day. And boy, are they having to listen to sign people up and to meet their needs. So I don't believe we're losing it. The place we're losing it is at the top. How many CEOs of big foundations, big nonprofits, or fundraising directors, development directors, actually take the trouble on a weekly or daily basis to speak to an ordinary donor? Yet they have thousands of people doing it. And you know what? Those fundraisers who start on the street are now actually going into leadership.
So I think Simone would be pleased with that. You know, and thank you for letting me know that you'd be calling in today. When I knew that you'd be calling in, there's one thing I absolutely wanted to learn from you. You know, Simone was very, very American. Loved her country, but she was also European. And her European roots were something that was very important to her. And I was just wondering if you had a sense of how that made her different, or how that spoke to her and made her Simone.
That's a very good question, Ted. And for the listeners, you may not be aware, but Simone also had a home with Tom, her life partner, in France. They traveled extensively. They attended many European and rest of the world fundraising conferences. Indeed, my wife and her spent a wonderful time together at the Italian fundraising conference many years ago. And I think the way in which Simone drew upon that was she read literature, which was not necessarily mainstream American Anglo-Saxon literature. She absorbed the culture of France deeply, her and Tom spending a lot of time there. And that gave her a nuance, which, again, Ted, I think you'd appreciate, is she didn't just come with her American baggage. And that's not to say American baggage is negative. When she spoke at conferences in France or Italy or in Holland or in the UK, she came with a universal or an international approach. And even though boards and leadership and structures of nonprofits do vary, she listened before she spoke. So she didn't apply, this is how it has to work because this is how it works in the USA. So I think that cultural richness, which she also brought back to the USA and Canada and elsewhere, really made her something special. And even her name, you know, always misspelled and always mispronounced, gave her an opportunity to explain that.
Yeah, no, I think she reveled in that. I can't, Daryl, I cannot thank you enough. Obviously, someone who knew her very well, traveled and spoke extensively. Stay here as long as you can. We're going to go on to a speaker with area code 317-296. If you could introduce yourself and share your Simone Joyeau story.
Hey, Ted, Mark Pittman here.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Wrecked, but good. It's fun hearing some of the quotes from and the memories that people are having. Simone was a force of nature, and I'm so glad that she's going to – the parts of her that have impacted people are going to be living on for a long, long time. I'm really touched by that.
What do you think will live on most? I mean, what rings out for you?
There's well, one thing that rang out, and – I know this is probably a family show, so I'll try to keep it a little less, more in Simone's vein, though. But the one of the previous callers says she could be a bit difficult. I wrote down on my pad of paper, she could be a pain in the ass. And she liked it. She liked to shake the tree, and she liked to see. But I think it was for authenticity and truth. If you're going to say you do something, then do it. If you're going to say you're a fundraiser, then study fundraising. Don't just do what other people do or don't just coast, but be excellent at it. I loved it when I watched her in Rhode Island. I think you were there too, wasn't it? Were you doing part of the fundraising coach or coaches?
Yeah, the fund coaching. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So watching her tell the board, let the board off with the hook in the first half of their training of, you don't have to ask for money, and then wallop them with, you got to be ambassadors, but they didn't know that they were being walloped. They're just like, oh, sure, I can be ambassadors. I can connect people in my nonprofit to my Rolodex. That's great. So I loved her kind of subversive nature and sometimes full frontal, like just brute force, and sometimes much more finesse. And it was, she just kind of knew what tools to use when she wanted to use them.
And she had a lot of tools, didn't she? I mean, she could speak softly and make you listen more intently, or she could be, you know, very animated. She had a very big tool.
I remember her walking up and down at a keynote for the National Catholic Development Conference. People have already mentioned this, but she said she was asked about her PowerPoint. She said, I don't just PowerPoint, but I have handouts. So she wanted handouts for everybody. And she'd walk up and down and just looking for the people who were alive, looking for the people who'd respond back and calling them out in a, I think it felt confrontational if you didn't know her sometimes, but I think it was definitely more of an inclusive, inviting people to stand up and to be fully alive and to be fully committed to what they're doing. That excellence is something that I know you're going to probably ask, what do you think what's going to live on? And for her, for me, it's the call to excellence, to continue keep studying and keep learning and not take things for granted. It's definitely going to be something that I know I'm going to credit her with as I continue going through whatever life is left for me.
Yeah, and Daryl, I think you were able to hear, was just reminding us that she did all of that in a couple languages.
I know, isn't that great? And then she spoke French,
yeah,
too. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
in a couple languages.
I think of her as just someone who was so confident, but also so kind, but just did not suffer fools.
I don't know how confident she was. I think she was confident about certain things very solidly, but she did not suffer fools. That is 100%. She and I were at this Bloomberg L'Oreal Women of Worth celebration. After 10 years of honoring these nonprofits, they decided maybe we should train these nonprofits how to raise money. And so she and I were brought in for the inaugural year of their academy for that. And Bloomberg really thought they were helping people by having their national top CEOs, CMOs talk about to these small startup nonprofits, how to work with the mayor of New York City and how to get regional governments and global governments to support your cause. And finally, and it was during the Q&A
right?
period, oh, she was just livid. And during the Q&A period, instead of the awardees getting to ask a question, after a while, she grabbed the mic. And she just started saying, this is crazy. There's no way any of these people are going to be able to get in front of Michael Bloomberg or those people, but they need to know. And she just really brought the truth to the room, even though it wasn't her party. That didn't matter. She just couldn't stand the foolishness that she was hearing being dished out to nonprofits that couldn't adjust to that. They weren't at that place yet.
And I think that's what I meant by her confidence, because she had the confidence to do that. Because it came from a very solid place. I mean, when she said those things, she wasn't saying it to be provocative. It sometimes sounded that way, but she very, very deeply cared about what she was saying. I mean, she felt like she had to say something at that moment, right? I mean, she just was very, very solid in her beliefs of how things should be done and how people should be heard.
Right. Even if the other people around her weren't really sure that they were solid in the same beliefs about the way she was delivering that message. But I know when I was with her, I think it was Daryl or maybe Amanda, somebody said, one of the things I wrote down too, just thinking about her is that, in her presence, I always was scared she was going to find out something about me. And I always wanted her to point it out. Like there was something because I didn't know what it was, where she'd call me out, but I knew it would make me better. But it was that kind of mixed emotions of, oh, I don't want to be exposed, but if she does it, it's going to be good. It'll be something that'll be
really
good.
And she saw everything, right? I mean, she just was
right?
very, she, a lot of people have said and have written that she really set a gold standard. In your mind, what's that gold standard that she leaves?
Well, I think the question that I have been thinking about since I heard about her passing or as we went through that long weekend was kind of what questions would Simone ask or what would Simone question? The legacy is going to be the people she impacted, the copious writing, the degrees that she's helped establish and committed to. But I really think that that kind of striving for better and not suffering, you know, that the nonprofit sector in particular deserves the best leadership and the most committed consultants and coaches and the most committed staff members, that we should never do anything half-heartedly.
Right. Don't settle for second best. Mark, stay with us if you can. I just want to go. I'm watching our time. I just want to go to caller area code 610-696. If you would introduce yourself and share your Simone story.
This is Robbie Healy in Pennsylvania. Thanks so much. I met you and Simone in the flesh in 2000 at the ASC Faculty Academy. And I was a very new volunteer for ASP, then NSFRE, I think, on the national level. And, of course, the two of you were already pillars to be in awe of if you were me. And I think one of the things that we learned at that faculty academy was that adults question everything as part of their learning style. And it's good that we talked about that, because she did. And she questioned and she probed and she interacted with BJ, the master trainer. And our goal to have people as accomplished as you were, and she and lots of others in that room, was to make sure that when we launched it for the general audience, it would be really good. So I think
Robbie, yeah, I just want to say, if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, that was 2000 that we were there together. But if I remember correctly, the first half, she sort of sat there and she listened and she evaluated, and she decided it wasn't good enough.
She did.
And she absolutely did.
And
at halftime, she decided that she was going to rewrite the direction of the faculty academy, because it meant so much to her. She wasn't going to be willing to complete the academy without it getting better. And that was so.
And I also think that one of the conversations between BJ and Simone was around, what is the point of entry for the typical person who will attend this, and where will their skill level be, and how do we make this accessible not to minions who have no experience, but to people who aren't as accomplished. So I think that interaction, I got to see Simone look at outcomes differently, and not, and I think I was just on Vince Duckworth's Zoom, and we were talking about this as well. She didn't stand her ground. She made a very important point, but she was willing to consider other points of view. So I agree with you completely. The idea that we need to look at making this the best it can be, but also think about not everyone will be as an accomplished trainer as you and Simone and Barbara Levy, all those people who were already at the zenith of skills. But I think that the lesson I took from that was her complete and total intolerance of incompetence. And
right.
I think that's...
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry? I think that's what led her to write books like Firing Lousy Board Members. Why would you tolerate that? Why would you allow that to interfere with your mission? So I think that, for me, is the essence of her. Not to be provocative without some absolute amazing vision of what could be instead of what is.
Yeah, always. I think, Mark, are you still with us?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, because we were talking about, we'll wrap up here with the three of us wrapping up here. But, you know, that same concept of not suffering fools and really that gold standard. I mean, we kind of come back to those points, right? I mean, Robbie and Mark, I just wanted to ask you both to sort of think about that.
Yeah, Robbie, I was laughing with what you were saying because you're so right on. Yeah, not suffering incompetence. And was great. Thank you for sharing that.
I don't think she was edgy for the sake of being edgy. I think she was edgy for the sake of not barely moving the needle, but getting people to realize the needle was in the wrong place.
Wow, what a great way to we're just coming down to the end of our celebration of Simone Joyeau, so I'm just going to ask Robbie one last thought that we all need to take away.
Don't let her down by giving up the mantle that she handed us.
There you go. And Mark, how about your thoughts? What do we need to make sure that we take away from the incredible life and work of Simone Joyeau?
I love what Robbie said. Let's all commit to growing and to constant lifelong growing. And I love the story Robbie shared about who are the people that are coming to this. So really listening to the people we're trying to communicate to or for, and do that with excellence.
I want to thank you both for helping me wrap up just an incredible assembly of great memories of Simone Joyeau. And everyone, please go out there and be more like Simone.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Podcast with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcasts at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.